Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. It is Thursday, December 23rd, 2021. First on the docket today, the Kim Potter jury reaches a verdict. Well, let's just say sentencing is set for February 18th. Ghislaine Maxwell's jury adjourns until next week. More information on the 110-year sentence for that truck driver. Wait until you hear why this murder conviction was reversed. And guess what? Those Michigan parents, they want to go home. A woman who punched a flight attendant, she accepts responsibility. Police reformers, well, they get carjacked. A Wisconsin judge gets sentenced. The ultimate Christmas Grinch. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. First, a little housekeeping things. First, if you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button. Hit that little bell so you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And a big shout out to all of our subscribers, as well as those new subscribers that were sent over from Rakita Law, who we've been appearing on kind of all week. We appreciate that. We just went over 200,000 subscribers. So thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, let's get to the docket. First, the jury just came back in the Kim Potter case. That's right. She's the officer now convicted of recklessly killing Dante Wright. And guess what? Sentencing is set for February 18th. She faces 86 to 103 months, although it could go as high as 15 years because of some aggravating factors that the court may have to take into consideration. This was a case where obviously not a lot was in question as to what happened. It came down to a lot of legal analysis. The longer the jury deliberated, more likely it was not going to be a defense verdict in this particular case. As you may recall, the jury came back the other day and said, hey, we think we're deadlocked. What should we do? The judge sent them back to conduct further deliberations. And, well, they ultimately reached a unanimous decision of finding Kim Potter guilty of both counts, count one, the reckless manslaughter, as well as the negligence theory as well. Both of those counts will run concurrent for sentencing purposes. And as I stated, the presumptive range, 86 to 103 months, 15 years, up to 15 years for aggravation. The judge is going to be able to consider some variance in this particular case because, well, let's face it, Kim Potter's probably not a threat to the community. She lived a law-abiding life for the last 49 years, 26 of which was as a police officer. And then she had obviously one bad day. Sometimes people forget. I try to remind people that all the time, given the work that we do, how quickly one's life can change. This is a classic example of it. And I've said this before, if your life was a big old movie reel, they would spread it out and they would splice out that portion of that bad day. And the jury has to consider of that information right there. Did something happen or did it not? Not whether you're a good person, whether you're a bad person, but whether the acts occurred. And in this case, the jury said guilty. Well, the jury in the Ghislaine Maxwell case was released yesterday, and the court had previously stated that they would be released as of today, and they could, if the trial was still ongoing or deliberations in this particular case, that they would come back Monday. And that's what the jury decided to do. They were given the option of whether to come back and deliberate today. And they said, no, we want to take a break. So more than likely, the jury will go home, do what they aren't supposed to do. I'm not saying they will, but let's face it, they're probably going to talk to people over Christmas dinner about the fact that they just happen to be on one of the biggest trials taking place right now, that of Ghislaine Maxwell. And, you know, that pressure from people saying, wow, isn't she guilty? Don't you think she's guilty? Or maybe saying, hey, if they didn't prove the case, find her not guilty. But I'm sure those influences will go on. It'll be tough for those jurors not to be able to talk about the fact that they're on that jury. Hopefully they follow the court's instructions and don't discuss their deliberations with anyone. All right. Next on the docket, let's talk about the truck driver who was sentenced to 110 years for his sentence regarding the death of four people and others that were, well, not only seriously, but permanently injured. That's right. That's the case of Rogel Aguilera Medeiros. Now, his recent sentencing sparked a significant backlash. The first person to object to the sentence was the judge who imposed it, clarifying that the state's mandatory sentencing laws that he had to impose were handed down. Well, now the first judicial district attorney, Alexis King, who sought the punishment and went forward on all the charges in the first place, says that she never felt such a punitive response was necessary to protect public safety. That's an interesting comment since, well, she didn't tell her prosecutors to dismiss the overcharging. No, she didn't. She went forward and let the jury decide it. And now she looks like she is basically a mean person. And Alexis King doesn't want to look like a mean person because her whole push to become the elected DA was that she was a kinder, softer, gentler district attorney. Ms. King said in a statement yesterday, she said that her administration contemplated a significantly different outcome in this case and actually initiated plea negotiations, but it was Mr. Aguilera-Medeiros who declined to consider anything other than a traffic ticket, said Ms. King. By her own admissions, Aguilera-Medeiros was sentenced to die in prison, not because the state felt that it was a fair and just punishment, but because he insisted on exercising his constitutional rights to trial. Now, prosecutors, let's face it, they're known to pile on charges and threaten astronomical prison time unless the defendant agrees to plead guilty and save the trouble of trial. This is known as a trial tax or a trial penalty. Now, should the defendant insist on his innocence and should a jury disagree, he will likely receive a much more severe sentence for the actions. The only difference is that he, in this particular case, Mr. Medeiros, invoked his Sixth Amendment right to proceed to trial. Now, both the defense and the government acknowledged that Aguilera-Medeiros' truck brakes gave out and that the accident wasn't driven by malice, which is probably why Aguilera-Medeiros thought a jury might sympathize with his story. Then after the sentencing, one person on the jury said he cried his eyes out because he was unaware that the conviction would equate to such an extreme punishment. Now, juries, understand, are not informed what the punishments are when they go back and deliberate. Aguilera-Medeiros' decision to go to trial was pretty gutsy. Only 3% of all cases actually filed go to trial, and only 2% of those 3% that go to trial and lose actually get reversed on acquittal. And as we stated, now District Attorney Alexis King quietly began the process to have Mr. Aguilera-Medeiros' sentence reduced, saying that she was going to speak to the families for their input. This can only be done pursuant to statute after Mr. Aguilera-Medeiros goes down to the Department of Corrections and is basically evaluated to see if he's some sort of risk to the community. And I told you yesterday, I have never seen a district attorney do this ever, ever, ever. I think they acknowledge that it was an overcharging of the situation. Now, the family, remember, they've spoken out. Some of the family members have spoken out and think that the 110-year sentence is absolutely appropriate. Now, there's a couple of things. So it's not uncommon for a district attorney, when they receive word that a defendant is going to exercise their constitutional rights and make the prosecution prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt, to add charges. This is a common tactic that takes place quite frequently, not only here in this jurisdiction, but just about every jurisdiction, to pressure the defendant to take a plea bargain because of the fear of a greater sentence if they actually lose at trial. Additionally, what district attorneys will also do is say, if you go to a preliminary hearing, if you file motions in a particular case, all plea bargains are off because they basically don't want to be troubled with seeing if the facts and the truth are actually coming out. Now, what's interesting about this particular case, and I think this shows some reason why the overcharging took place, and that is because the prosecutors in this particular case are facing some criticism, but I think it shows what they were up to, and it wasn't about seeking justice, it was about winning. So the two prosecutors are facing some criticism who actually tried this case for apparently celebrating the conviction with a trophy made from a brake shoe, a reference to the deadly incident. Now, Kayla Wildman, a deputy district attorney who worked on the Aguilera-Medeiros case, posted a photo on her Facebook page of a brake shoe adorned with a shiny plaque that was engraved with her name, the case number, and the words I-70 case. Now, Wildman's Facebook post included the caption, "Get yourself a trial partner as great as Trevor Maritzky. He's the number two person at the Jefferson County's district attorney's office, and he also tried the case." She goes on stating, "He turned a brake shoe from a semi-truck into a memento. What a special gift from a truly special person." Alexis King said that the brakes were not a piece of evidence from the case, and she added that the post was in very poor taste and the incident has been addressed internally. "I'm sure that was, please take that down and let's not have any more trophies from trials," because their job is to do a do justice, not keep track of all of their convictions. Now, let's face it, it's not unusual for somebody to win a trial on both sides to get some high fives, but most people think it shows a little bit of lack of empathy and that dishonors the role of prosecutors as defense attorneys to basically have plaques to that particular situation. Now, the defense attorney for Mr. Aguilar-Medeiros said that he may appeal the verdict. He should if there's any legitimate legal issues in the case. And he's obviously seeking a sentence reconsideration. Now, he was a prosecutor, Mr. Colgan was, for many years before becoming a defense attorney. And he says that the trophy shows an example of prosecutorial misconduct. I'm not sure it goes that far. It certainly shows a lot of poor taste. And it also shows, I think, that they weren't interested in their ethical considerations of doing justice. It was about winning, and then they were basically gloating about it. Something the prosecutors, well, they shouldn't do, because were they going to receive that kind of joy in sending somebody to prison? It's not like we're talking about somebody that chopped up people intentionally or desecrated them and mutilated them, some sort of sick pleasure on their part. The prosecutors conceded that the brakes were bad, and the issue was whether Aguilar-Medeiros should have proceeded forward. The jury concluded that it was reckless behavior because he knew the brakes were not in appropriate working condition, and he missed appropriate opportunities to put the truck onto a runaway truck ramp. Let me know what you think. Do you think the prosecutors should receive some sort of discipline, or do you think the district attorney saying it's been handled appropriately internally is sufficient? Let me know. All right, next on the docket, wait until you hear about this case as to why a man's murder conviction has been reversed. So an Oklahoma murder conviction has been overturned after it was discovered that the county judge who presided over the trial, that's right, was having an intimate relationship with one of the prosecutors. Now, Robert Hashigan was convicted in February of murdering a 95-year-old woman by the name of Evelyn Goodall back in 2013. But now that conviction has been tossed after former Oklahoma County District Court Judge Tim Henderson admitted to having a sexual relationship with a district attorney in his office who helped prosecute the case. Now, Judge Henderson, who's also married, has resigned after three female attorneys came forward with allegations of sexual misconduct against him. Now, one of those being the prosecutor on the Hashigan case. The woman said the former judge began sexually abusing her in April of 2016 and continued for over 2 years. Now, despite this, Henderson described the sexual involvement as consensual and said he insists he was a neutral and detached judicial officer at all times during the Hashigan case. Now, even more cases are expected to be impacted by this judicial scandal, so to speak. Now, this has happened before. I am personally aware of a situation here in the state of Colorado where a female prosecutor was engaging in some sexual relations with a judge. They were doing it in his chambers. And oh, by the way, they didn't put it on the record that he was engaging in these sexual conducts and didn't recuse himself from that specific prosecutor appearing before him. Yep, creates a big old mess. Judges know better. And boy, I've said it before, work relationships never work out, particularly when you're a judge and there's a prosecutor or a defense attorney. It doesn't matter. Just don't do it. Let me know what you think. Should something happen to that judge? I mean, probably going to lose his law license. He's no longer a judge. But what about the prosecutors? You know, they're supposed to be attorneys. They know better to say that they were in this abusive relationship. They couldn't come forward beforehand. I don't know. Maybe there's enough blame to go around for everybody. Well, not surprisingly, the Michigan parents, that's right, they want to go home. The defense attorneys representing James and Jennifer Crumley, the parents of the teen charged with killing four classmates in Oxford High School, have requested that their bond be lowered to $100,000. The attorney, Shannon Smith, added that the couple would wear ankle monitors if released. Now, as a reminder, James and Jennifer Crumley have been charged with involuntary manslaughter, and they've each been jailed with a $500,000 bond, which obviously they cannot make. They are accused of allowing Ethan Crumley access to a gun and failing to take him out of school when summoned regarding his writings before the alleged November 30th shooting. It's also alleged that the couple failed to show up in court when they were charged and then basically had to be hunted down by the United States Marshals. The attorneys also noted that they were going to appear at a different court that managed Saturday arraignments, and they were not attempting to run away. She also said that the gun was locked, and in court filings, the attorneys added that the last thing they expected was a school shooting would take place or that their son would be responsible. The attorneys did acknowledge that Jennifer Crumley sent a text to her son saying, "Don't do it." But the attorneys say that was a plea for him not to kill himself after the shooting at Oxford High School had already occurred. And that's what I had mentioned before. And people said, well, she sent a text. I said, well, the timing is important. The attorneys are flushing this out and they're saying it was afterwards. So the defense attorney is also saying that it's clear from the media appearances by the district attorney that this is a case that she takes very personally, and the charges are filed out of anger in an effort to send a message to gun owners. The attorneys for the defense said that the charges against the parents should be dismissed. The judge is not expected to consider that bond request until January 7th. I mean, I think it is a novel and unique theory to prosecute the parents in this particular case, particularly if it is true that the gun was obviously secured and locked up and that they did not know that their son was going to go to school and commit a massacre, ladies and gentlemen. I get it. People are angry, but I don't think the parents should be on the hook for this one unless there is some other evidence that I am just not aware of. And at this point, I'm not seeing it. Next on the docket, a woman who likes to punch a flight attendant, Vivian Quinones, she's 28 of Sacramento, and it was alleged she punched a flight attendant in the face during a flight, breaking the flight attendant's teeth. Now, Ms. Quinones pled guilty to federal charges the other day and now can face up to 20 years in prison. However, the prosecution said that they would probably recommend a sentence of 4 months in custody and 6 months of home confinement. Now, Quinones was on a Southwest Airlines flight in May from Sacramento to San Diego when a flight attendant, identified only as SL, asked her to buckle up her seatbelt, stow her tray table, and please properly wear the mask during the descent. Ms. Quinones admitted in her plea agreement that she was not wearing her face mask properly at the time of the incident. It's a gateway crime. There you go. And the Federal Aviation Administration, just to let you know, reported nearly 5,800 incidents of unruly passengers in this last year, with 4,156 incidents involving passengers refusing to wear masks. Another 300 incidents have involved intoxicated passengers, according to the FAA. Now, Ms. Quinones will also be barred from flying on commercial airlines for 3 years, according to the prosecutors. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, we've said this before. Is it really worth looking at federal time and 20 years in prison for disruption of a flight crew as it relates to their duties? No. Listen, I get it. It sucks. You don't want to have to wear the mask, but those are the rules. You got to follow them. You're not making some statement and they're not going to change all the rules because you refuse to wear your mask. It's a private company. Yes, they're following the rules, but they would probably have that requirement anyway. If you patronize a company and they say you have to wear a mask to come in or fly on their plane, you got to wear the mask. Don't give the flight attendants a bunch of crap about it. They're just trying to do their jobs. Most of them don't want to wear the masks either. But just be polite. Come on. It's Christmas, for God's sakes. We'll see what happens to Miss Quinones. Seems like for breaking teeth, 4 months seems a little light to me. But let me know what you think. Next on the docket, two Democrats who supported police reform in Philadelphia, which means to defund the police, as well as in Chicago, were both carjacked at gunpoint within 24 hours of each other. Illinois State Senator Kimberly Lightford was targeted in suburban Chicago on Tuesday night, while Congressman Mary Gay Scanlon was carjacked Wednesday afternoon after an event in South Philadelphia. Now, Lightford was driving her husband at 9:45 p.m. in a Chicago suburb when three masked suspects hijacked the couple's Mercedes. The suspects fired multiple shots during the incident, but the couple was not physically hurt. Now, Lightford said in a statement, "I am trying to process the trauma of what happened, and I want to thank everyone who offered their love and support." Now, less than 24 hours after Scanlon, a fellow Democrat, was carjacked at gunpoint in a separate incident, and she returned to her blue Acura MDX. Her personal cell phone, government-issued phone, and purse were inside the car when the carjackers took off. Now, both Scanlon and Lightfoot have previously spoken out about police reform, especially in the wake of George Floyd's death in Minneapolis, and they both co-sponsored bills in their respective offices that call for mental health specialists to be dispatched instead of police in some incidents. We've seen too many lives taken and communities devastated by police brutality and racial profiling, Scanlon tweeted after Floyd's death. Action is long overdue. House Democrats are fighting for real reform in our country's police departments. Hashtag justice in policing. And ladies and gentlemen, we've said this before. We want good police officers out there. But I don't think that defunding the police is the appropriate thing to do. And it is funny, the people that don't want the police around, that's right, they're the first ones people call when something happens to them. Karma? Justified? I don't know. Let me know. Obviously, I'm glad everybody's okay and the people need to be prosecuted for what they have allegedly done. And we'll be curious to see if the politicians in this particular case think that no one should be prosecuted for their crimes. I mean, after all, if maybe they were better politicians, these people wouldn't have to go out and carjack people for their belongings, right? Because they would have everything they desire. Let me know. All right, a Wisconsin judge got sentenced. You have to admit, it's a little brings a little joy to your heart every now and then when the hunters become the hunted. That's right. A former Wisconsin judge who was in the children's court was sentenced to spend 9 years in prison and an additional 20 years on supervised release for distributing inappropriate images of minors. We've talked about this. People that want to be near kids, haven't we? Even people that want to be near kids in court all the time. Makes you gotta wonder. Well, Brett Bloom, 39, of Cottage Grove, pled guilty on September 28th. He was serving on the bench in Milwaukee County when agents arrested him in March. The sentence fell below what federal prosecutors sought. According to the court documents, the United States Attorney's Office asked for a prison term of between 12 and 15 years. The prosecutors noted that the government acknowledged that the defendant has no criminal history. However, this changed when he sent to other people on the internet. The defendant unquestionably knew his actions were illegal. He's highly educated, passing the bar exam, and licensed to practice law. And oh yeah, that by the way, he was a judge. And despite his extensive education and depth and knowledge of the law, the threat of the incarceration did not stop the defendant from committing the crimes. Therefore, a significant term of imprisonment is needed to deter the defendant from committing any future crimes. Defense attorneys for the judge noted that the minimum sentence, 5 years, saying that his fall from grace was punishment in and of itself. And the judge selected 9 years of incarceration, applying the federal sentencing guidelines in a fashion that landed nearly in the middle of the recommendations of the state and the defense. That's known as, that's right, the splitting of the baby, the Solomon splitting of the baby. It happens a lot because judges don't want to look like they're being too soft and going to, for what the defense asks for, and they don't want to appear as being too hard and asking what the prosecution's asking for, so they split the baby. Now, listen to this. What a grinch. An Atlanta warehouse was broken into, obviously this is in Georgia, and they broke through a cinder block wall and stole thousands of dollars of Christmas gifts that were meant for needy children. Now, people are calling this cold-hearted burglar the real-life Grinch. The nonprofit Empty Stocking Fund posted on Facebook the news and said they know the impact this will have on families, and their hearts are very heavy because this is obviously taking place just days before Christmas. They said it looks like a war zone inside. It's the craziest thing they've ever seen. I mean, what ambition to actually go through and knock down a wall to get in to be able to take this toys. Now, the organization had already distributed about 20,000 gifts to children and determined the end of the holiday season on a high note. The nonprofit is hoping to raise another $25,000 to fill as many holiday orders as possible in the next few days before Christmas. The call for goodwill has garnered close to $9,000 as of today to the Empty Stocking Fund. Now, the owners of the building said they had footage from the break-in from outside the Empty Stocking Fund's warehouse, where a man posed as a volunteer before taking unspecified items from the location. No arrests have been made. If anybody has any information, that's right, they should give that information to the police so this Grinch can be apprehended and prosecuted. All right, our dumb criminal of the day, but let's do a quick recap throughout the week. Tuesday, Patrick Florence and Darius Owens were pulled over during a traffic stop. Owens was arrested for DUI and marijuana possession. A handgun was found under Florence's seat. Mr. Florence was searched, and officers found a baggie containing cocaine and meth wrapped around his penis. Mr. Florence responded in the course of the investigation, "That's not mine." Wednesday, Levi Metcalf intentionally elbowed his girlfriend in the face during an argument over a Christmas tree. I'm sure he said, "That wasn't my elbow." Thursday, an investment banker driving a Porsche convertible punched a 16-year-old girl in the face after berating the teenager for cutting him off in traffic on a Florida roadway. 46-year-old Stephen Saunders followed the teenager to an intersection and yelled, "What the F are you doing, you stupid B? You cut me off." Then allegedly he reached into the driver's side window and punched her in the face with a closed fist. Mr. Saunders was charged with burglary of a conveyance with assault or battery, a felony. He was released on a $15,000 bond and entered a plea of not guilty. All right, we want to thank everyone for getting us over 200,000 subscribers. I assure you, we know this channel would not be possible without all of you. We want to thank you. We want to wish everyone a happy holiday, a Merry Christmas. We will not have a video up tomorrow, and we will see you all next week. Have a wonderful holiday. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.